Marcus Smart is back, but the Celtics lose a tough one in Brooklyn. I've got the good, the bad, and a lesson from this game that might apply to the trade deadline on this Friday. Locked On Celtics. Mills, let's go. Rainy J's back with the vengeance. Back. All the real Celtics fans in attendance. This is the truth like 34. This like walking in the garden when you hear the roars. Crowd goes crazy, most in-depth coverage on the daily, mainly podcast royalty, the content kings. When you talking about the franchise with 17 rings, focus like Danny at the deadline, global with it, got a local feel like the red line, the blue line, the green line, play it in between time. I'ma throw my C's jersey on in the meantime and press play. When the F's done, I can't wait until the next day, trying to stay in tune with the C's, it's the best way. Melly. Hey there, welcome back to the Locked On Celtics podcast. Thank you for making this show part of your daily routine, whatever it is that you are doing, wherever you're going, however you're listening to this show. I am very happy that you're making this part of your day. I'm hoping your day is a little bit better because of this podcast. I'm John Corrales. I host this show Monday through Friday, so you're going to get a daily podcast out of me. I cover the Boston Celtics for Boston Sports Journal, and I am the author of The Boston Celtics All-Time All-Stars, a book now available at booksellers everywhere, and signed copies available through my website, johncorrales.com. Celtics lose the first game out of the break, 121-109 to the Brooklyn Nets. Celtics had their chances. They had a lead as much of 11 in this game. The game was a two-point game. It was about 3.5 minutes to go, but basically at the end, it boiled down to they had Kyrie Irving, they had James Harden, and the Celtics did not, and that was enough for the Nets to win this game. But I will say, I'm not disappointed by this loss. This is not a loss that is like the losses against, you know, a lot of those losses over the February, like the Pelicans loss, like those the Mavericks loss, all of those disappointing losses. This one, I don't know. I come out of it, I'm like, okay, they lost to a good team. This is a Brooklyn team that, you know, the Celtics had to play perfectly, and they didn't. They certainly made mistakes. And the Brooklyn Nets moved the ball very well, showed that why they are probably the favorites at this point to win the NBA title. So I thought, you know, wasn't that bad. And I'm not even saying like it's a moral victory. This is just, you lose to a good team. And Marcus Smart said after the game, quote, "We came out and we played. We ran things right. We got chances after chances. We just got to execute them better. And that's all you can ask for from the players. Our effort was there, and I can live with a loss when the effort is there. I can't live with a loss when there's no effort." And I came into this game, I did one of my radio hits before the game, and that's, I was asked, what do you want to see? I said, I want to see them try. I want to see them try so I can feel better about my takes about February being a lot about fatigue. And they did. They tried. They worked hard. I think they made some mistakes. They were a little slow on a couple of things. They didn't execute some things very well, much like Marcus Smart said. And they lost to a better team. That's as succinctly as I could put it. So in this show, I'm going to do my normal, the good, the bad. Segment one's the good. Segment two's the bad. And there's plenty of the bad stuff for sure. But none of the bad stuff is the frustrating stuff from before. And then segment three, a lesson from this game that maybe a lot of the stuff we've been thinking about with the traded player exception, maybe that is wrong. Maybe we have been thinking about it wrong. And this game kind of shows why. Let's start with the good and start with Jason Tatum, who was the team's leading scorer. He had 31 points on 13 of 22 shooting. He shot 59%. He shot 43% from three. He only got to the line twice, which is still problematic. Got to get to that line more. 5 rebounds, 3 assists, a steal, and a couple of turnovers, including a pretty bad one late. But overall, good game, and a 20 points in the second half. 5 points to come in after the Nets took a 10-point lead, and it was like, uh-oh, you know, danger time. And he came in and hit a three, hit, you know, had 5 straight points there and kept the game close. So I thought Jason Tatum was generally pretty good in this game. He had a rough shooting, not totally rough shooting, but he started off a little cold, and it took him a little while to kind of get up to where he wanted to be. But in the end, what more can you ask for than a 31-point performance? Okay? Nothing superstar, like crazy shot-making or anything like that, but he had a good game. And he was the only one, I think, offensively, he was the only one that really had a good overall game. Although Daniel Theis, who was part of my good as well, he was huge in the third quarter, and he had a 7 of 10 shooting night, so he had 17 points. So he was there. He was doing things. 17 points, 8 rebounds, 2 steals, a block. That third quarter, the Celtics came out of halftime, and I thought that, wow, maybe the Celtics can do this. Maybe the Celtics can actually, like, build something here. And the problem is that the Celtics, once they built something, they made a couple of mistakes. Brooklyn makes you pay for them so hard. You make one mistake, and they are there to just destroy you for it. You heard a lot of talk afterwards about the margins. The margins are thin. The margin for error is super thin against the Brooklyn Nets. And we saw, you know, every Celtics mistake just turned into a gut punch. But I thought that Daniel Theis was good and at the center of, no pun intended, a lot of the good runs that the Celtics were making, especially to start the second half. So in general, pretty good game by Daniel Theis. Marcus Smart returned in this game, and I thought he played really well. He was hitting shots. I mean, he 3 of 5 from 3, 4 of 6 overall, 8 of 9 from the free throw line. This was a very Marcus Smart game, right? Like, this was the Marcus Smart kind of, you almost wouldn't know except for the minutes, which were right about 21, which was Brad Stevens played him the last 5 minutes of each quarter so he could finish the game. And kind of shows you, by the way, you know, Brad's trying to figure out, like, how the hell do we win this game with, you know, still not being full strength? How do we use Marcus Smart effectively to try to win this game? And by getting him used to playing the end of quarters, you get him down the stretch, and, you know, Smart really, I thought, benefited from that. He played well, just wasn't enough. But again, Marcus Smart was playing a very Marcus Smart game. He had that huge block, like, out of nowhere, just underneath the basket, comes up out of nowhere, and I forget who it was that he blocked, but it was just a monster block shot. In fact, I'm going to call it up as we speak, so I can see it again, kind of describe it as the as it happens. I mean, this is just such a beautiful play. It's in transition, Kyrie Irving coming up in transition, Marcus Smart and Kemba Walker, 3-on-2, Kemba dishes it off to Bruce Brown, and as soon, I mean, oh, Marcus is so good. As soon as Brown gets it, and he's like, nope, I know what's going to happen here. Kemba's in front of Bruce Brown. Like, that's Kemba's man. And Marcus behind him just comes up and swallows up that shot. I mean, it was just a beautiful play. Unfortunately, it ends up, and this is the breaks. This is how the breaks go. Smart comes up and swats that, and it ends up kicking out to a net for a three-pointer. Like, after all of that, but that's a function of, hey, they're out there, they're running, they're working hard. The ball rewards energy. The ball finds the good energy, right? So that's the kind of play we're talking about, but the Marcus Smart block shot was just awesome. He drew a charge, it was an offensive foul on a pick set, like, late in the game when they needed a turnover, and he got it. He just did a lot of great things out there. But most of all, how many times have I said in this show how much Marcus Smart organizes this team? If you do follow me on Twitter, I tweeted out a video. There are a couple of videos out there. Marcus Smart just pointing, like, okay, you get this guy, you get that guy, you here, this is what we're going to do. And getting guys where they're supposed to be. And we saw a few examples of that in this game. And it was very helpful. I mean, a couple of those plays ended up going Brooklyn's way anyway, partly because of fouls and partly because Brooklyn, sometimes you just make shots. You play well and they make shots. But you could see Marcus Smart's impact out there, organizing his team, getting his team where they're supposed to be. And that type of voice, that type of basketball IQ is immeasurable. And so that I was very happy to see that back on the floor. I feel like if he was out there for 30 minutes instead of 20 or 21, they might have won this game. Like, obviously, they might have won this game if Jaylen Brown hit some shots, and that's coming up next. But 10 more minutes of Marcus Smart can change a lot in this game. And I think just getting guys together and some of those defensive mistakes that I'm going to talk about in the next segment, maybe they don't happen quite as much with Marcus Smart on the floor, because they happened a lot with Jeff Teague on the floor. And not to say that it was all Jeff Teague's fault, but Marcus Smart wasn't on the floor for some of these things, and he could have prevented some of those lapses, maybe a couple. But hey, one of those Landry Shamet shots, one of those Joe Harris shots doesn't fall. You get out the other way, and instead of Brooklyn cutting a 10-point lead to 7 or 5 or whatever, maybe it just grows to a 12-point lead or 13 or 14-point lead. And that just changes the math a tiny, tiny bit. So I'm looking forward to more Marcus Smart is what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. More of the bad stuff that I just hinted at is coming up next. Bet Online is the fastest, easiest way to bet on all of your sports action. We're back into the NBA second half. The in-game stuff during the NBA games is fun. College basketball, March Madness is coming up. We're in conference tournaments now. NHL is here. Baseball is coming back. You get the idea. BetOnline, they even cover TV shows, reality TV. There are updated odds and props on just about anything you can imagine. So go to BetOnline and check it out. Sign up for free. Whether you're on the web or on your mobile device, you can sign up today. Use the promo code LOCKEDON. You're going to get a 50% welcome bonus. So if you deposit $100, they'll give you $50 on top of that as a welcome bonus. That's how the 50% welcome bonus works. Check them out. They've got you covered. News, scores, odds, the best way to place your bets. Free to sign up. Use that promo code LOCKEDON at BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. Please gamble responsibly.
Be sure to follow our social channels, LO Celtics on Twitter and Locked On Celtics on Instagram.
Have you checked out the Locked On Today podcast? On today's Locked On Today, on the one-year anniversary of the NBA shutting down due to COVID, an NCAA team is forced out of the tournament due to a positive test. Get more of the sports news you need in less time with the Locked On Today podcast. Follow Locked On Today on the radio.com app or wherever you get your podcasts. Now, the bad from the Boston Celtics loss to the Brooklyn Nets. Plenty of this stuff. We can start with the non-Tatum minutes, especially to start the fourth quarter. But the non-Tatum minutes were kind of problematic. And they, instead of starting with Tatum in the fourth quarter, they started with Jaylen Brown, and maybe Brad Stevens was trying to get Jaylen Brown going by having him be the main guy on that Jaylen Brown plus mostly bench units, and it didn't work. If that was the case, it didn't work. Because Jaylen Brown in this game, 5 of 23, 3 of 12 shooting from 3, 13 points. He did have 6 assists, which was a team high. He did have 4 steals, so it's not like he didn't do anything else. But offensively, he was just, it was a rough game for him. But it was also a rough game for him defensively, too, on occasion. So tough one for Jaylen Brown. But to get him out there with those bench units, if this was an effort to kind of have him carry that offense like Jason Tatum carries that offense, it's not something that really worked out well. And on top of that, you had Grant Williams out there ending up guarding James Harden. That's just, I like Grant. I think he's got a lot of good basketball in him. That's an unfair thing to ask Grant Williams to do. Guard James Harden? What? No. Grant Williams did not have a good game. He did a couple of nice things, and it wasn't for lack of effort, but he just did not have a good game. I don't know that this was the game for him to be out there. But then again, what are the other options? People have suggested Aaron Nesmith. Sure, maybe Javonte Green could have been out there. I think Javonte might have been a better choice than Grant. But are any of these guys going to guard James Harden? Like these are poor choices all over the place. And so, but Grant was on the floor for 16 minutes, and it was not a great 16 minutes. He was a minus 18, team worst, and he's usually a plus minus monster. This was monstrous bad. Jaylen Brown, interesting thing. Here's the interesting thing about Jaylen Brown to me. So he took 12 threes. He hit three. Two that he hit, he stepped into. And if you watch them, you can go onto the NBA's site and call up the box score on the NBA site. When you do that, there are links. So when you go to Jaylen Brown's thing, you can click on, the numbers are blue. They're links. You click on that three, and you'll see the three shots that he made. And two of the shots that he made, he stepped into the shot. And so one was a tip out to him. He up-faked, took a dribble, stepped in, one, two, stepped into it and shot. Another one, it was in transition. So he was moving towards the basket and he shot. Every other shot that he took was a catch and shoot. And he just, everything missed. Except for one where he got the shot off quickly because I think it was Kyrie Irving who was bearing down on him. I find that interesting because the stepping into the three is a rhythm shot. And these other threes are not shots that he had trouble with before. It's not like he hasn't hit those shots before. But it makes me wonder if he's getting the right lift on his shot, if he's feeling comfortable. And I'm just looking at signs for him with his knee. Is that something that is bothersome with him? You know, like when you step into the shot, especially when you're a right-handed. So when you're a right-handed shooter, it's right, it's left, right, and you rise up. And when you're catching and shooting, obviously, or some of those were like sidesteps, but you're, I don't know, it's you're not in that same rhythm. And I just wonder if there's something about him stepping into those shots that made those shots go in. Maybe it's nothing. Maybe I'm reading into it. But I did find that. I noticed that in the game, and I said, huh, okay. Something to watch. I don't know. Another bad thing, Kemba Walker. Weird game for Kemba Walker. In the first quarter, 4 of 5, 9 points. We're like, damn, rested Kemba is going to be awesome. Then the rest of the game, 1 of 7, 2 points the rest of the way. What was that about? Where did Kemba go? He just kind of stopped shooting. And I mean, he played 34 minutes. It's not like he didn't play enough. He had opportunity. Brad Stevens said afterwards they were really paying a lot of attention to Kemba. And, you know, we've seen in past playoff series that you can pay attention to Kemba. So I got to go look at that again and just watch Kemba's minutes and see why Kemba was all of a sudden limited. What did they do defensively? And that's just something I wasn't 100% focused on. I got to go watch that again. But it was a weird game. And after the first quarter, Kemba was kind of nowhere. The other big thing, and I wrote this on Boston Sports Journal. It's now currently up. By the way, subscribe to Boston Sports Journal. Use the promo code Corrales. You're going to get $5 off an annual subscription. I wrote about the slow defensive rotations. The double teams that turned into three-pointers, and it happened just about every time, it felt like. But the Celtics would blitz Kyrie or try to double Kyrie, try to double James Harden, and it would result in a quick pass and another swing and an open shot. And it happened, I highlighted three versions of it, three plays. And in those three plays, you could see the Celtics were slow to double, which immediately, if you're going to double team somebody, you've got to go, you got to make it count. So in the second quarter, Grant Williams and Jeff Teague are trying to go double James Harden, but it's off a pick and roll, and Jeff Teague takes this big circular route to James Harden, gives him plenty of time to be like, oh, okay, here comes the double team. Okay, waiting for Jeff Green to get into the middle of the paint. There you go. Here's a big looping pass that still gets in there, no problem, because everyone else is occupied with somebody. And Jeff Green kicks out to Landry Shamet and does, you know, Landry Shamet drills it. And Kemba closing out on somebody's not gonna, that doesn't scare me. If I'm an NBA 3-point shooter and Kemba Walker is coming out on me, please. Kemba does it because he's trying, but maybe you can force a guy to change the rhythm of his shot. But if Kemba's coming at me, I'm taking a nice, easy, clean look as far as I'm concerned. But that double was terrible. And if you're going to have a terrible double team, then the whole thing's going to fall apart. And it happened again in the fourth quarter. Jaylen Brown, I don't know what he was doing. But again, Jeff Teague involved, and this is unfair because he was just guarding Kyrie. But Jaylen Brown is just, it's like he and Kyrie are just kind of like looking at each other. And Jaylen comes over to double, and Kyrie, just in rhythm of his dribble, just fires a bounce pass over to Jeff Green, who swings it over to Landry Shamet, and there's nobody to... You've got Daniel Tice, who's got a guy underneath the basket, and he has to leave the guy underneath the basket to go challenge Landry Shamet. Doesn't get there in time, does a good enough job as best he can, but Shamet's got that shot off, no problem. It's slow... Slow rotations, slow double teams, slow reactions. That's fixable, but that was bad. It was just bad, and it cost the Celtics in a big way. There's even one that I highlighted where Marcus Smart kind of did it right, and they still made the play anyway because, you know, Kyrie is still Kyrie, and you can hate him all you want. He's still damn good. But that defense, those mistakes really, really were costly because it was bad enough that Kyrie and James Harden were doing what they were doing, but they're also making the right plays, swinging the ball. And you saw when the attention goes to your stars and a team overreacts to your stars, you get that ball out of your hand fast and you move the ball and good things will happen. If anything, this is the game tape to show Jason Tatum, like, hey, look what happens when Kyrie and Harden get double teamed. That's how fast you should be getting rid of the ball. This is how you should be reacting. So, all right. Up next, a lesson from this game about the traded player exception. Built Bar is the best tasting protein bar in the market. I've been telling you that for a while. Low calorie, low sugar, high protein, high fiber. Amazing tasting chocolate covered bars. I've got my favorites. You might have your favorites. Now it's time to figure out which Built Bar is the best. It's Built Bar Madness. Of course, they're doing a bracket in March. If you go to builtbar.com right now, you'll see the bracket and you'll see who's moved on. And there's some interesting choices here. Salted Caramel moved on. They're going up against Cookie Dough Chunk. That's a good matchup. The Peanut Butter Brownie up against Coconut Almond. That's good stuff here. Peanut Butter, my favorite, has advanced to the second round. So now we're on to the matchups today. caramel brownie versus cherry Barcia. Be honest, I haven't had the cherry Barcia one. I don't know. So I'm going to go caramel brownie on this. And then lemon almond cheesecake and carrot cake with walnuts. I'm a carrot cake guy. I actually do like carrot cake. I'm not a big cake guy anyway, but carrot cake is my favorite in that. You know, lemon almond's good, but I don't know. I'm a carrot cake guy. I don't know. Is that odd that I'm a carrot cake guy? Do people not like carrot cake? I feel like I'm admitting something that people might come back at me and be like, really? You are? I like carrot cake. Go to BuiltBar.com. Vote now. Check them out. See what this bracket is. They're on to the sweetest 16. And pretty soon will be the enticing 8, the flavorful 4, and the championship. So, and while you're there, make sure you use the promo code LOCKEDON20. Get 20% off your next order. Check it out. 20% off your next order at BuiltBar.com. And check back to see who won today's matchup and who will become the best tasting protein bar.
Make sure you're subscribed to Locked On Celtics wherever you get podcasts or follow us on Spotify.
This year, the Locked On Podcast Network will be live on Selection Sunday, March 14th. That's just a couple of days away. Reacting to who's in and who's out of the NCAA tournament, Big Ten Ben Stevens and Josh Neighbors host Selection Sunday Live with local experts from around the Locked On College Network of Podcasts. Follow at Locked On Live on YouTube, Twitch, and Facebook today. And watch our selection show Sunday, March 14th. So one thing that came out of this game, we're trying it so hard to figure out what the hell Danny Ainge is going to do at the trade deadline and what he should do and what's proper team building. And on one hand, we've talked a lot about Harrison Barnes. And Danny Ainge could possibly go out and get Harrison Barnes. It's a guy that, when you look at this team, you say he would fit well. You can get Harrison Barnes on this team and it would make them a better team and it would change a lot with the lineups. And certainly Harrison Barnes would make this team a better team. How good would that make the Celtics? And when you look at these Brooklyn Nets, you've got Kyrie Irving, James Harden. On top of that, you've got Kevin Durant just waiting, getting better from a hamstring issue. And I don't know what Blake Griffin's going to be, but he could potentially be somebody good. But the point is that they've got three of the best players in the NBA on their team. And obviously two of them conspired to join forces in free agency. That's something that happens. And they made a trade for James Harden. And the James Harden trade is the one that is relevant here because when you look at what Danny Ainge is going to do with the traded player exception, does Harrison Barnes move the proverbial needle enough? Does he, with this traded player exception, does he make the Celtics better or put them on a level with Brooklyn? If the Celtics had Harrison Barnes in this game, do they win this game? They might. They might. But does Harrison Barnes strike fear in anyone? No. Not really. He's a good player. He's a really good player. And he does make the Celtics better if the Celtics do make a move for him. But the point of this is it's really about the star. And when I brought up Bradley Beal and his potential impact on this team and its future team building, it just makes you think like it's whatever moves Danny Ainge is going to make, they kind of almost have to be geared towards a player of Bradley Beal's stature more than getting the Aaron Gordon's and Harrison Barnes of the world. Like, I mean, maybe not. Maybe Tatum and Brown go get so much better that you build such a balanced roster, like that a Aaron Gordon, Harrison Barnes, acquisition is enough to carry the Celtics because of depth and higher quality talent around the entire team. And then Tatum and Brown like elevate everybody, and those guys elevate Tatum and Brown. And maybe like there's certainly an argument to be made there. Certainly an argument to be made there. However, I just wonder if when you look at how the teams around the league, who are the contenders? Who are the teams? Brooklyn, obviously. You got the Lakers, and they got LeBron and AD. You've got the Clippers, who got Kawhi and Paul George. Philly, who's got Joel Embiid, an MVP candidate, and Ben Simmons, an all-star. Milwaukee, who's got two-time MVP, and, well, that's basically, I don't want to say that's basically it. I mean, Chris Middleton's should have been an all-star, all-star level player. But each of these teams has one guy, at least two guys, in some cases, and in one case, three guys, that would probably be the number one guy on any other team, right? Like LeBron, AD, Kawhi, Paul George, all of those are top-level players. Joel Embiid, all three guys from Brooklyn, they've all been, you know, maybe Kyrie, not quite as much, but still. And so the Celtics have Tatum, and the Celtics have Brown. Kyrie's not quite at that level, obviously. I mean, Kemba's not quite at that level, obviously. But when, you know, he can still be a high-level player, but the talent that they have outside of Tatum and Brown, who are developing into high-level players, and look, by the end of this year, I mean, they're right there on the cusp. But is it enough to do the stuff that we've been talking about? And so watching the Brooklyn Nets, seeing how the Brooklyn Nets have been assembled, it doesn't surprise me. It doesn't surprise me that Danny Ainge is kind of like, I don't know if I'm going to use the traded player exception. I don't know if it's going to go the way you think it's going to go. Like we could go get somebody. We could, but maybe we shouldn't. And you know what? Maybe they shouldn't. Especially if the whole luxury tax thing, as I've been talking about, is invoked. Like if they do something that doesn't make them very good or doesn't make them very much better, and it triggers a luxury tax, and then in 2 years it's like, this team's getting too expensive, and the ownership's Wick and the rest of the guys, they're like, we can't afford this. Like if that's something that a move now triggers, then you definitely don't want that. But I just wonder if the stuff that we've been talking about the Celtics doing is really, really worth them doing. When you watch what impact these superstar level players, like real superstar level players, can do. Like Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum have superstar level moments. They're star players for sure. And, you know, Tatum has had more superstar moments, and Jalen's just kind of, he's found some here and there, but if the Celtics have an opportunity to collect the right assets and maybe go get a Bradley Beal in a year or two, why wouldn't you? Why wouldn't you gear up for something like that, right? That's the lesson. That's the thing that I take out of this game is, why wouldn't you? Like, if the Celtics had Bradley Beal out there, whew, that would be something. But that's not to say they shouldn't do anything. They should do something. And I've talked about this in a couple of radio appearances on Thursday. The Celtics do owe it to these guys and all of their hard work and all of the things that they've been going through to improve this team. the Celtics owe it to these guys to do something that makes this team better. Even if it's a couple of smaller moves or one move that shows these guys the front office is trying to do something while also, you know, keeping an eye towards the future. We all get that the future, all of that stuff. We all get the future stuff. But you should give them an extra tool somehow, an extra somebody that can help, because these guys deserve somebody that can help. You know, a smaller, like we talked about the George Hill deal with Jay King. Like, that would be fine. That would be fine. Give them somebody else that helps. Figure out the lineups a little bit more and see what you get. Maybe something breaks your way. And you still don't compromise that future. Let me know what you think. I mean, I'll be honest with you. Sometimes you hear a good argument the other way and you go, oh, wow, I didn't think of it that way. And maybe your opinion changes. Clearly, if you've been listening to the show on a regular basis, my opinion has been evolving on this as it goes along, because there's so many different things to consider. And as the season unfolds, you're like, well, maybe the stuff I used to think about this season and what Danny Ainge should do, maybe that's not the right move. As the season continues on, you're like, huh. And as other teams make their moves, you say, oh, okay. How does that impact the Celtics? Is that the right thing? Should the Celtics try to compete with that right now or not? So, a lot to consider. I do not want to run a team. I do not want to run a team. That's for damn sure. God, I'd be horrible at it. That's the show. Hope you've enjoyed it. That's this week's full slate of shows. Monday through Friday, I'm here for you daily during the week. Not on weekends. I get to take a couple of days off for myself, right? So subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. And if you are a regular listener, appreciate that. Really appreciate you listening and subscribing and downloading the show multiple times a week, hopefully 5 days a week. 5-star rating on iTunes or Apple Podcasts, that's kind of like the gold standard, but also Spotify, wherever you can rate, just whatever you can do, if you can help me out with a good rating, it'd be awesome. And share the podcast. Tell your friends that they should be listening to the Locked On Celtics podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network.
Thank you for making Locked On Celtics the number one Boston Celtics podcast on the planet.